This is the K-Pop Cast, and in this episode, we are joined by debut author Fatima Alabi to talk about her new K-Pop book, The Strings Between Love and Race. Welcome to the show, Fatima.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Fatima Alabi first became an avid reader at age 19 when she was going through a tough time experiencing homelessness, and reading was a way for her to find escape. She decided to become an author and provide that same kind of solace for others, and we are so delighted to have her here today talking about her debut novel, The Strings Between Love and Race, which combines her love for K-pop with an interracial love story.
And because K-drama OSTs were such a big inspiration for the book, we also share our favorite K-drama OSTs as hit replays for this week. We also talk about Chaeunwoo, which is a very important discussion that everybody should be having, right?
Yeah, this was basically a fangirling conversation where we dished about our favorite Korean dramas, our favorite OSTs, actors, pretty faces, all of that. But we also got deep into what are the dynamics and stuff that can come up when you're going against your family for any reason, or when you're dating interracially. And I just appreciate Fatima for showing up so vulnerably in your truth and sharing so much of your experience with us.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you guys for listening to my story.
So before we get into all of those juicy topics, don't forget to join the K-Pop Cast listener fam on Slack. Link to the space in the episode description.
And now for our special K-drama OST hit replays.
I'm Stephanie.
I'm Fatima.
And I'm Michaela. And hit replays are our K-pop song recommendations we want you guys to check out. And we're doing our special OST picks for this episode. So Fatima, you are our special guest. And kick us off. So what is your OST hit replay for this week?
So my OST hit replay song is 보고 싶다 by Kim Bong-su.
On this song, so if for you guys that don't know, 보고 싶다 was from the OST for the drama Stairway to Heaven that came out back in 2003, ran into 2004, starring Kwang Sang-woo, Cho Ji-won, Kim Tae-hee, right? This was her big breakout role, I believe, that year, and Shin Hyo-jun. And Kim Bum-soo, he's one of those like very, foundational Korean singers. He's part of the Kim Na Baek-hee group, which is basically the four guys that are considered the top R&B ballad singers in the country. So it's Kim Bum-soo, Nal from Brown Eyed Soul, Park Hyo-shin, and Lee-soo, who was the singer for MC The Max. So Fatima, tell us, why is this your hit replay or your OST pick for this week?
For me, this particular drama, it was when I started going back to watch old school K-dramas, and this one just took my heart and ripped it apart. And with this song itself, it's like this, you know when you have a wound open and then someone presses on it? This song really does that to how hurt and how painful this drama is, and the song just expresses that in a very painful form. Just listen to it, listening to it whenever I feel down or sad. I'm the kind of person that likes sad music, even when I'm sad or happy.
It plunges you deeper into sadness.
Yeah, let's go down. Let's take it all the way down. And I just love how it speaks to my soul. When I was writing, I listened to the song a lot whenever I'm writing a sad scene, because it brings that, I think it brings out emotions from just any sort of pain you're going through. And the way his voice just comes out through expressing the words. And I think also understanding Korean, when I listen to it, it just, oh, you can cry just listening to it, even if you don't understand. But then understanding the words adds a lot more emotion to it. And for me, this
like
pick,
I miss you anything. So much that I could die.
Right,
I could
literally,
die. That's what
she did die. If you haven't watched the drama, sorry for the spoiler, but she did die, and that hurts so much. Yeah, she did.
Well, it's from 2003. Of course, she dies at the end. Stephanie.
Well, there you
that's
go.
That's true.
And it's like they went through so much, only for her to die. And it's like, oh, why? You know those lovers that like second chance, slow burn, or they meet again, reunited lovers, and it's like, oh. Just give them a happy ending. It's not a happy ending, guys. FYI. And the song just gives you that stab in the heart to remind you of that. But a beautiful song, beautiful voice. And I actually referenced this song in my second book, which I'm excited about, as it reflects the emotion there as well. So yeah, it's a big part for me because it's one of those songs where I can listen to it anytime and still feel the same emotion. You rarely get songs like that.
I love it. Me and Fatima have this thing where we can like listen to sad music and get energy from it. I notoriously am the one who has the K-pop songs, the Cry Into Your Pillow 2 award show at the every
sad
year.
Sad boy anthem.
I listen to all of those all throughout the year.
I cannot blame you.
Sometimes you just need a good cry. Mm-hmm.
This one is on that playlist for me though, but it's actually the first time I heard it was when Dio from EXO covered it. Ooh. So I didn't even know really at that time it was like Kim Bum-soo anthem.
The origin.
Yeah. This song, I'm so glad you picked this. I would say this is the first K-pop song I ever heard in my life. And
really?
It is still my all-time favorite.
Yay.
Like, where?
I don't even know. I think I must have heard it at a Korean friend's house while I was like studying over and the drama is playing or something. I have vague memories of where I saw it. Either there or on soompi.com back in the day. I had just joined the forums in like 2004. and I was just hooked. I was like, whoa, I need to learn what this K-pop stuff is about. Again, I didn't know any of what he was saying, but I got the meaning. Mm-hmm. I definitely got the meaning. And it actually became like my norebang, like go-to song. And to the point where my Korean friends are like, all right, she's going to sing Bogoshipta. All right, everybody sit down. Because, you put it perfectly. I won't repeat your comments, but we are on the same page and I am just endlessly hooked in again and again each time it plays. So if you have not heard this song, beautiful song, Kim Bum-soo Bogoshipta, if you haven't watched the drama, Stairway to Heaven, here's your invitation.
I believe it's on Viki. So,
haha, yes, that is true.
For our US watchers, maybe on Netflix, who knows?
Just make sure you have a bag of tissue next to you. That's all I'm going to recommend.
But Stephanie, what is your OST pick for this week?
My OST, so I was thinking, should I pick Bogoshipta? But I've like talked about it on the show many times already. So I was like, no, pick something else. And I was like, what's a drama that I don't think I've officially recommended on the show, but I really liked. Mm-hmm. My pick is Hyolyn, Crazy of You or Crazy Over You, Michige Mandoro, from the drama Master's Son.
I absolutely love this song.
I was going through my short list of K-drama OST favorites, and I was like, all right, which one still makes me feel something the most years later? And just from the first piano notes, just from Hyolyn's first airy, light notes. Oh.
Her voice, this
her voice. Hyolyn. Okay, so Hyolyn is, like, for those who don't know her.
Which, if you listen to our show, how dare you?
How dare you? Tali, okay. Hyolyn is a vocal and dancing and body and visual and stage presence powerhouse. She has few rivals in the entire K-pop industry.
Facts.
Right? So she's legend. She was originally in the group Sistar and then in the breakout duo Sistar 19. And has had an illustrious solo career after that. And what I appreciate about her performance in this song, this soundtrack, 미치게 만들어, is how she consistently, how she doesn't overdo it, how she keeps it simple, how she uses falsetto, and how she keeps a consistent tone with her voice, like making you, like pulling at your heartstrings, which is really hard to do when you're not pushing that much vibration and sound through your voice. It's hard. So it's like really advanced and an underrated gem, I think, from her discography. And then Master's Son, oh, I just smile. I grin ear to ear thinking about this drama. It's from 2013, and it stars other legendary Hallyu celebrities, Seo Ji-seop and Kong Hyo-jin. These two, their chemistry is off the charts in this show. It's supposed to be like a haunting ghost,
right?
Scary, but like they're just so funny and so cute. Like you don't care about the ghosts after a while. The basic plot is that she sees ghosts. She's kind of a wacky person who sees ghosts, and they keep her up at night. She can't sleep. But there is one cure for her ailment, which is to be in skin-to-skin contact with this one man.
The best cure. Please
the best
give me
cure.
That.
So she's always trying to be all up on him and touch him and grab him. And he wants none of it for the first few episodes. But then, you know what happens after that. So,
it's like, girl, you need your cool come over here.
I mean, yeah. So I could watch that show again and again. I highly recommend it. It's so sweet. It's so, like, essence of K-drama. It's out of this world. And so
yeah, I need to rewatch it, to be honest.
So pleased to have this chance to share it with you all.
Right. I love when we can talk about K-drama on this show. And also K-pop.
It's
great
show.
Time.
K-drama cast forever.
Forever.
No, this song. For me, one of her best OSTs has to be Becoming Each Other's Tears from Horang. Have you seen it? Or listened to it?
Oh,
my goodness.
Wait, yeah, I've heard it. I haven't watched the show, but I've heard that song. Yes.
Horang. That song was in my head rent-free for years till now. Such a beautiful song. Horang is debatable. I don't know. It's like a bunch of princes.
It's not a top 10.
I think it's the time, the era where they filmed it, you know, the acting for all the actors were not really there yet. Mm. But they had some really yummy men in there. But yeah, I don't know. The OST gave more than the drama, but something good came out of it. That's what I'm going to put. But yeah, I love her. She's such a great singer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Our final K-drama OST hit replay is from PD-nim Michaela.
Yeah, okay. So starting off, I'll be honest, I haven't watched the show really. I've seen like clips.
That doesn't matter. It's not required.
Right, and that's because we are talking about OSTs, and my OST pick is Hyoko, Ma Sit Non Soul, or Ma Shinun Sul. So
is from the OST for the 2016 K-drama remake of the U.S. drama Entourage. Have you guys heard of that show?
Yeah.
Yes.
I tried watching it, but...
Originally on HBO, starring So Kang Joon. It was good. It was good. But more importantly, they released this OST, and initially, like, they had a bunch of hype for this OST, and they labeled it the Entourage mixtape because they really wanted it to, you know, stand on its own, as well as bringing in all of these amazing, like, really popular, like, indie alternative hip-hop R&B artists. So, like, on this mixtape, you have Doki, Hash Swan, Binzino, Samuel So, G2, Eddie Kim, Punchinello. Like, it's just a stacked OST. And it's, like, truly, like, this mix of all of these really great artists individually. But the first track on this OST is the one by Hyoko, which... for me, back in 2016, was like the drought of Hyoko because it was in between albums.
I was like, where did he go? Yeah.
Yeah. So like, so this song kind of got me through that drought because, you know, it's just a party song, you know, just like drink it every day. Allegedly, he wrote this after like drinking for 5 months straight. And like, that's where you get the inspiration for all of the water becomes... alcohol, the alcohol becomes whatever, and like you're really disoriented and you're just having a great time.
Woo. So that's like a day in your regular life, Mikaela?
I wish, you know, I aspire to go to Korea and just have one of these nights, you know?
Yeah.
Just bar hopping.
Well, you haven't been yet?
No, I have yet to actually go. I was trying to go this year, but it ended up, you know, not working out. But one day.
It's wide open. They're ready for you.
I have to go. I literally wrote half of my book based in Seoul, and I haven't been. I had to use research and a lot of friends helping me out.
Yeah.
But my Korean friends that I've read it said it's very accurate, so I'm very happy about that.
All right.
I need to go for book two.
Yeah, yes, so, yes, for research, of course. Yeah,
of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just research.
Yeah, so check out this OST, Machine and Soul by Hyoko.
All right.
On that note, let's get into the book, talking about you, Fatima, and your book, right?
Yes. So, yes. Yes.
Before we get started into talking about the book specifically, like let's get to know you a little bit more. So, how did you go from working in the fashion world to becoming an author?
So, very good question. So, I'm a local person. I do creative things all round. I have tried different creative ventures, and at that stage in my life, fashion was the next thing. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. And I just had fun creating stuff. The first thing that started it, actually, was this tablecloth in my friend's house. And I've been looking at it for a while. And one day I just thought, you know what? I want to make something with this. So I asked her if it's okay. She's like, go for it. I took needle and thread. I just put the fabric on myself and I made a dress, like a backless dress. And her husband goes,
whoa,
did you just make that with needle and thread? And I was like, yeah. He was like, measurement, nothing. I was like, I just used my body. And he was like, you need to do something with this. Like, you're really good. And I thought, I am. Okay. And then I started.
It means a lot
learning.
When the husband stops what he's doing.
You know what I mean? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Whoa, yeah.
So yeah, I did a lot of just YouTube research and things like that. And then a business was birthed. I remember my first time meeting a client. I thought, Fatima, what are you doing here, you fraudster? Run away, because this makes
you
no sense. Like, right. Learn from YouTube. How are you here getting people's money? Because what actually made me more popular as a fashion designer was I helped my friend's younger sister make her prom dress. And again, no experience, no actual technique, just trying what I thought was right. And it looked right. And I thought, how the hell has this turned out this way? And my friend had filmed her wearing, she just styled her really nicely, placed it really well, and then took pictures and posted on Instagram. And it sort of went a bit viral. And I was like, oh, okay. And then people started hitting me up, like, and her friends as well. Could you make my dress? And I'm like, guys, I don't know what I'm doing. But everybody was like, you know, just go with it. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with it, and it lasted about 2 to 3 years. I made wedding dresses. I made video shoot dresses. I made some pretty cool stuff. However, the African aunties got me.
Oh,
yeah. You know what that means. A lot of people, right, see fashion designers as tailors, which is a problem. So they bring you alterations. They bring you like all these styles that are not fun, but you have to do it, especially if it's an African auntie, because, you know, respect and all this stuff. And I'm like, I just felt trapped in the skill I had because it wasn't fun anymore. I just felt like I was doing it out of duty. Even like the way they'll price it down, I felt like intimidated to like say something to them. And it got so bad. There was one particular auntie that took me out. She really did a number on me. And after that, I said, you know what? I'm packing it in. Like, I've had enough. Yeah. It mentally started getting to me where I started having panic attacks. Like, it was so bad. I had no control over my own creativity and I felt so powerless. But I couldn't speak up either. So I thought, until I find the strength to say how I feel and say no, I can't keep going this way. So I dropped it all and
powerful.
Yeah, I just gave it all up. Till this day, people beat me up about it. Like, oh, you were so good. And I'm like, yeah, but I wasn't mentally okay. And people still to this day, oh, please make my dress or please, alter this stuff for me. And I'm like, I'm not a tailor. I was a designer and people still don't understand the difference. And it really drives me crazy. And yeah, it just wasn't fun anymore. And I hated that people took away the fun from something I really enjoyed. So I stopped fashion. And then I thought, where do I go again from this point? Funny enough, after lockdown, I just sort of stopped everything creative-wise and I just focused on my 9-to-5. And then my brother had, you know, said one day, I'm coming to see your house to talk to you about something. I was like, okay. Came over, sat with me and he was like, Fatima, what's going on with you? Like, this is not like you to not do something creative outside of work. That he was really worried. And I remember I got so defensive, like, can I not take a break? Do I always have to be doing something? And I got really mad at him. But after he left, I gave it a thought and I thought, you know what? He's so right. The reason I'm not trying again is because I'm scared. And I shouldn't let I shouldn't let other people push me away from what I enjoy. So just to give you a backstory, at the age of 21, I made a list of things I wanted to do. I have done everything but one at this point. So the next thing on my list at that time in my life in 2021, at this time now, was to become an author. And I was like, you know what? It's time to tick that box because I'm still not ready for fashion. But with writing, no one controls my art. I decide what I write. And once it's out, if they like it, great. If they don't, they don't have to buy it. Unlike fashion where I'm getting forced to do things I don't want to do. But with this, I control my creative outlet. And that's what drew me to finally doing that. And then I went for it. But luckily enough, K-pop had already intertwined into my life. So I thought, what would be better than a K-pop love story in that sense? And I used my experience of interracial dating and added that all up. But I would leave that for a second part of your question. But yeah, that's how it all was birthed.
We're going to get to that.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so on that note, obviously K-pop is a very big inspiration for this book. But you told me right in our pre-call that you were originally not a K-pop fan at all. Like you intentionally were trying to avoid it, right?
Yes, so I was the anti, unfortunately, not really towards K-pop itself. So I was the kind of girl where if there's any trend, I will fight myself to not fall for it or jump on it because I'm unique and I'm different. You know, that whole BS. But anyway, I was refusing to jump on the BTS trend. I just refused. I didn't know anything about them, but I just didn't want to give a trend a chance. At that time, I was still a fashion designer. And this lady, I was making a bridesmaid dress for her and she was one of the bridesmaids, came in. She was on her phone throughout the fitting and I was like, oh, what's going on? She's like, oh, BTS are coming to London for the first time. And she secured 2 tickets, but she's trying to sell one off on Twitter. And she was just so excited. And I'm like, you're 28 years old. Acting like a child. Like, what are you doing? I was just taken aback to see how giddy she was. And I thought, I don't know, it's giving, I don't know, sus. I thought, okay, cool, let me just, don't judge her.
do your thing. It's cool. And then fast forward to me in 2018. Mm-hmm. Started a new job with an Asian family. They were from Vietnam. And I just thought, you know, since I'm going to be working for this family, I wanted to like get a bit more into opening my mind to their culture, just Asian culture in general, just introduce myself to things I can speak to them about and just get familiar. So I went on Netflix and I tried looking for different shows. I tried Chinese. I don't know. It wasn't really falling for me. I tried Japanese. But the moment I heard Korean, it's like I was hypnotized.
Oh, wow.
I cannot lie to you. The moment I heard Mida, I thought, what is that? Like, bonde? Like, what is this magical language? I need more. So I started with the show Empress Ki. If you haven't watched it, what are you doing? Jump on Netflix right now. I don't know if it's still on Netflix. Don't quote me on that. But anyways, go where you find your K-dramas and go watch Empress Ki. So I started with Empress Ki. I started watching the show, I think about 9 p.m. I was there till 5 a.m. and I had work at 10. I was like, how can I go to sleep? This is a whole new world. I was tempted to call in sick. But what I did instead, I went to work and I kept taking bathroom breaks to catch up on the show, I swear. I'm sure my boss thought something was wrong with my bladder because, yeah, I was in there just sneaking to watch more. I was so curious, like, what's going to happen next?
I love this.
Obsessed.
I think we're all just like grinning ear to ear because your story is so relatable.
Right.
Girl. All of us going around.
This is how we get like the first like, time. It's like your first boyfriend, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
you can't get enough. And like even honestly, the phrase like whole new world, like I use that all the time.
The first word that really got me, that stuck to me was Koronika. And I'm like, it sounds like Veronica. So Veronica. I remembered it. Yeah. Veronica. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this word? So I started like implementing it. And when I talked to my coworkers, and I'm like, this girl has lost her, she's lost her marbles because what the hell all of a sudden? Yeah, I became.
You just accelerated to like stage 3 of K-pop obsession.
Absolutely. Integrating like Korean into your daily life.
At there work. You go. But you know what's crazy? From that point on, I think I've only watched 4 English shows since then. I only consume K content. Like, if it's not, miss me with that. When my brothers call me, oh, I have a new show you need to watch. Is it Korean? Miss me with that. I'm just miss me not with that. Miss me with that because it's just not my people. I'm sorry. It's not. Yeah, wow. I have been a convert. So from then I discovered my Cha-Onu, but we'll get into that later as well. So yeah.
Well, actually, let's get into that.
Yeah,
now.
This can be free flowing
from K dramas, and then what was your foray into the K-pop of it all? So Cha-Eun-woo.
So K-pop,
right?
Yes, Cha-Eun-woo was my intro to K-pop. So what was the first drama I watched for Cha-Eun-woo? I think it was my ID's Gangnam Style. Oh, Gangnam Beauty.
Gangnam Beauty.
So after that one, I thought, oh, broody, handsome guy, who are you? From then, I just went to his wiki page and just watched everything he's done. And I just, there was something about Cha-Eun-woo, right, where I felt I can see through his soul. Don't quote me on that. But it's like when I see his eyes, he's smiling, but I can see the sadness or loneliness he carries with him. Oh. But I just felt, maybe it's just me. I left it at that. Then I started watching the show he did. It's like a, what do they call those things when they have like a reality show? But there's a K word for it. Pangsong.
Survival show or
variety.
What specific show are you talking about?
It's called Masters in the House.
Oh yeah. Yeah. With Lee Seung-gi.
My babes. I love Lee Seung-gi as well. But yes, back to Cha-Eun-woo, my babes. After watching that show, there was an episode where they went to actually it's two actors' house. I don't remember their name, but they're a married couple and they're both actors. The husband's an actor, the wife is an actress. And they were speaking about how them being married and then being in the same industry, how that helps them find someone they can, you know, console to and like just share their hearts and feel safe in sharing what's deep in their heart and not feel like the person will betray them or, you know, say it to other people because they're both going through similar things, if that makes sense. And just having that person that can look at you and know how you feel without you really saying too much. And as they were speaking, Cha-Eun-woo starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like,
that episode.
Oh my God. And then the lady just looked at him and she's like, she knows what he's feeling, that he must mm-hmm. be lonely. And he shook his head and said, yeah, that he wants to get married because for him, he wants to find that in a partner, someone he can share, because he has to hold so much in because you can't really trust people.
Nope.
Or open mm-hmm. up so much. And I realized what I thought was correct. This boy is so lonely. And like there's so much on his shoulders. Even like, I'm not saying he carries his group, Astro, but we know most people come there from him, just like I did myself. Mm-hmm. And it's like he shoulders a lot of that burden where he does more than just the band music. He does a lot of commercial stuff. He does a lot more acting. So he has a lot falling on his shoulder and he feels so responsible. But he has to like just take it all with it on the chin and not complain, because at the end of the day, people will look at him as a privileged person with the face he has, but he's still a person who feels. And that really hurt me for him. And I just thought, look at that. Some people look at him and think he has everything, but there's something we can easily attain that he can't. And that really hurt me for Chaunu. So mm-hmm. I wanted to embody that into my male lead character, June, which mm-hmm. I hope I did a good job at it. June expresses a lot of that, which is why Mina becomes a very important part of his life, because Mina was there before the fame. She's seen him in times where he was low and he's able to be himself around her. And he just wants that pillar of comfort, which is why nobody else matters. And I love that about the story. So yeah, that's how I sort of incorporated that. Another reason I did that was there was another episode where a group of actors, comedians, whatever it is, they all sat mm-hmm. in a group and they were talking about how he must have never been dumped in his life. And he was like, no, he has been. Like, yeah. He was so handsome. You know how like a lot of Koreans take looks as a pillar of like, yeah, you got it all. And he was like, no, he has been. And then they were like, what? Who would do that? Like, whoa. Like, they couldn't understand it. But then it got me really curious. Like, why would someone do that, actually? And then I really thought about it. And some women, even just doing more research into that, a lot of Korean women feel like intimidated when someone good looking dates them and society deems them not good enough for that person. Mm. So they get scared of being bullied or harassed, because it does happen. Mm-hmm. Like, who are you to think you can date this guy? They would come for you to the end of your days, because for them, they have a different imagery for what he should be next to. But I'm just like,
which is them, you know?
Which is no one but them, me. Actually,
it should be me. Yeah,
some of them will bow down, like bow out gracefully, yeah. because they feel like he should be with someone just as aesthetically
yeah, like a Miss Korea,
i.e., his character in the drama True Beauty.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So for him, but I was just like, doesn't it matter what this boy actually wants? Like, ooh. It's crazy how we control, or we think we have the right to control these people's lives, but they're people just like us. No one tells us who to date. No one comes to our lives telling us who's good enough for us. But mm-hmm. Well, why is it up to us who they choose? It blew my mind. Mm. And then I wanted to also show what it must be like for a girl like that.
Yeah.
What it must be like for her to have to reject him because of her own fears. And although she loves him or she likes him so much, she's also worried about certain things. So I gave Mina her own sort of struggle as to why she couldn't be with him. Something he couldn't understand, but we get to see as the readers as to why that is. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's sort of my piece of that.
Yeah, I think now would be a great time to kind of back up and weave in the book, like your debut novel, the reason why we're having this conversation. Debut novel is called The Strings Between Love and Race. And now we have a quick summary here. I know you've given little teasers, little threads into the plot and the characters. But do you see in the outline this summary here, did you want to take us through that, or one of us could as well?
Do you guys want to read it? Then I can give it a breakdown.
Sure. Okay. All right. So quick summary of the novel. Fangirling was how Mina, a Black British Nigerian girl, escaped being tortured by her past mistakes, which tore her family apart, vowing to live like a ghost to pay for her sins. But her plans fall apart when she gets entangled with a popular boy in school, a British South Korean named June. Through hardships and their undefined love, they got separated. 10 years later, Mina moves to South Korea to work as an intern through a foreign exchange program at the label of her favorite K-pop group, N.O., where she reunites with Jun in an unexpected twist of fate. Dun, dun, dun. Yes, my heart is already in my throat. Like, what happens when they meet? Oh my gosh, when they reunite, can they be together? What? So when you were writing this, we just have so many questions. Were you inspired by other books or shows? You did just mention some shows with Chaeunwoo, but were there other books or fan fiction that you read that you're inspired by?
Funny enough, when I write, I try not to read anything because I don't like to be influenced by other people's writing style. The only influence I ever go back to is, you know, my absolute fave, 50 Shades of Grey, although it's not really the same context. But let's say, for example, someone, I'm looking for inspiration for like an afterthought. For example, he muttered, I would go to that book to check what E.L. James did and then use that. Uh-huh. Nobody else is valid for me anyway. With this book, to be fair, it's a lot of reality put into fantasy. So the interracial part of it was my experience with interracial dating.
Yes.
Kind of weaved into it.
Please share also, more. Okay. Yeah, gonna pause you right there. Interracial dating experience?
Yes.
Only if you want to share anything.
Oh, no, absolutely. I've shared this online as well.
Sure.
So with my past, what shocked me the most, right, was just how people from my culture reacted. So I'll give you a bit of a background. The first time I actually realized I was dating outside of my race, and I say I realized because I was shocked too, and I'll tell you what I mean. So back in college, and this is like UK standard, college is like high school for you guys, I think.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So back in college, there was this boy, Hispanic, had like a hairy sideburn, like all the way down to like his chin. I don't know what it was about the hair. When I saw this boy, I just kept staring like, oh my God, the hair on that boy. Like, I don't know what it was. It just drew me to him. So then the next time I see him, I tap my cousin like, oh my gosh, like that's the boy. And she goes, he's not black. When I tell you, I was so shocked he was not black. And I'll tell you what I mean. I wasn't focused on where he was from. I just liked the boy. I wasn't thinking, oh, he's black, he's Hispanic, he's... I just thought the hair on this boy, and that's it. So when she mentioned he wasn't black, it was like, wow, like, why didn't I not think about that? Like, that part of him. Because I didn't care. I just liked him. The first thought for me is what I like about the person, not where they're from or their background. And I remember when I said this online, someone had come for me and said, oh, if you didn't think he was black, what do you think he was? And a friend of mine who is married interracially said the perfect answer. She said she thought he was human. And I was like, period. There's nothing else I could say to that because I don't start with color. I just start with quality or personality or, you know, facial feature like the hair, for example, that I liked. Or just maybe he has soft hands, whatever it is what I look out first. And then that's how I continue dating. If I like someone, it's whatever attracts me to you, not really about the context of your background, your social standing in life. I don't care about any of that. And I realized going with time that not everyone thinks the same way I do. Most people look at those things first before they carry on with anything else. And then I got into my first serious relationship and it was with a guy who is from Afghanistan, but grew up in Pakistan and had lived in the UK for over 10 years. So for me, it's just a guy that I like and we're talking. When people found out where this guy's from, I was so shocked the things people would say. And I was just like, doesn't it come down to how I feel about this person? Like, does it matter? Aww. And most of it is all stereotypes and just what the media portrays about people and things like that. And one man is not a country, even if those things were true. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't have every single person from that country represent what the media says about that country. It's crazy.
Definitely not what the media says.
There you go. Mm-mm. So it was very hard just seeing how much, sometimes I just wouldn't mention anything just because someone called me extreme.
Ooh.
Because, yeah, I was really taken aback. Like, I'm extreme for dating someone else at my race. I was just, yeah, I was blown away. I was really, really surprised by the comments I had. And then
this is by other folks in your community.
My culture, exactly. Yeah. Oh. Don't just like Fatima, you're always so extreme. Like, why are you so... People find you really weird because, like, I'm a lover of all people. I don't care where you're from. I don't care who you are. If I vibe with you, I vibe with you. I don't really care about all those, like, you know, extra junk. But yeah, people from my culture just don't get me because I'm just open, I guess, to just people. But yeah, So I was really shocked by that. So I wanted to portray in the book as well, that sort of dynamic and also show that this happens. Because when I actually started dating this guy, I was expecting the, I guess, what's the word I'm trying to find? The refusal or like the rejection to come from his side because I was, prepared for that.
Well, yeah.
So seeing people behind me rejecting, what? I was like, whoa, I didn't prepare for you guys.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Like,
you're supposed to have my back.
There you go. That really took me by surprise. Don't get me wrong. One thing I love about my family is, this is not my family, by the way. My dad and my mom raised us in a way where, but as long as you're happy, they could care less.
Oh,
the first
sweet.
Thing I said to my mom, I was like, I think I might end up, you know, marrying someone that's out of my race. And she's like, is he a person you like? Yeah. She's like, is it me that's going to live with him or is it going to be you? I was like, me. She was like, so well, why are you telling me this? I don't understand. Like, it's your life.
Wow.
You're the one who's going to live with him. So you pick who you want to live with. Like, that's your life. And that's how my parents are. Hey. But a lot of African parents are not like that. They're very much involved in who you pick and how you pick them. So when other Africans see how I live my life, they're really wondering, where are your parents and what are they doing about this?
Where are your parents?
Like, you're like, what how are they old doing about like, this? There you go. So they're more involved in my life than my actual parents, like in the sense of trying to control or steer my life in a certain direction. And I'm just like, guys,
I'm connecting this back to the aunties who wanted
you to hem their
dress and do the tailoring.
You
know, didn't take no for an answer. There's something here. There's a common thread.
There is something here.
Like you're expected to fulfill this role, this function, you cannot deviate from that.
There you go. So a lot of the times when I'm dating and it's not a bad person, I'm just like, Lord, how do I go about this one?
Here we go.
How do I break it to my people?
Yeah.
That I'm dating a human that's just not from their realm. So yeah, that's how it's been. And then the fangirl element in the book, for me, I added that as an apology to that girl that I judged back then, where I looked at her being giddy about BTS and thought she was, you know, acting a fool. And I actually did a lot of research on why these women were fangirls, like both young, old, over 50s, and just seeing the joy it brought them, hearing the stories and the charities and like the money they've raised just from the love stemming from these boys. I thought it's mind blowing, absolutely mind blowing. So I wanted to help educate other people as well to understand where this love for fans come from. And why they love these K-pops so much. And what is it about their music? And yeah, I created the band called N.O., which also means Neighborhood Oppas. I absolutely love the name.
When we were talking about this, we thought it made too much sense, right, Stephanie?
I did say that. I was like, oh, that's cute. It's not quite
it's like
K-pop because it's
door,
not weird enough. Yeah. Like it has
absolutely.
To be, you have to have some like weird grammar that doesn't fit. Together.
But it's very cute.
Right. No, I love it. I love it. It's so cute.
Thank you. Initially, right, I was going to go with something like CTS and I thought, no, people are going to come for me. It's basically BTS without the B.
Right.
Stop.
If you come for BTS, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, let's not play that war. Armies, I am not ready for that fight.
I wonder, yeah, have you gotten any like hate or criticism or celebration from ARMY or like the K-pop fans out there?
I'm still getting out there with them.
Yeah.
I'm just more into like the K-drama-ish, K-pop-y sort of readers. And so far they've loved it because a lot of people, it's their fantasy brought to life.
Yeah,
right.
But it being from a mixture of the interracial element is what makes it even more, I think, enduring or alluring, shall I say.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best reviews or the continuous stem of reviews I keep receiving for this book is how people from different stems of life say they feel like they're Mina when they read her story.
Mm.
And for me, that's the best thing, because you hear a lot about when people say they read people of color's books, they can't really relate. They don't feel like they're a part of the character. Man. So hearing that they feel that, honestly, gives me so much joy, because I wrote Mina to be like a virtual visualization of the book. So you feel like you're her, you're seeing life through her eyes. So for me, that's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, sounds like you wrote a deeply personal, authentic, and through that universal story. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I did want to pivot quickly to another question from Virginia, our sometimes host and member of the crew. She wanted to know if you experience any pushback specifically when telling people that you were going to write a book about these topics.
So there was one time, I think I posted on Reddit, and this girl had come and said, why are you using them like a fetish? Why are you writing a fetish or something? And I thought,
I knew that was coming.
What? When I responded to her, she apologized, because she was like, oh, why didn't you say that first? And I'm like, why should I say that first? So my explanation to her was, I've been in interracial relationships before, so I'm writing from experience, but also this is real life. Why is dating a Korean guy a fetish? Like, what? And then she goes, oh, you should have mentioned that. And I'm like, why should I have to mention that? Blew my mind. But yeah, a lot of people overthink sometimes, or just think some people are just a niche, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Or it's like putting you in a small box and that's where you should stay. Why is it so unimaginable that an African, Black British girl and a South Korean British boy can be together? And for them to do so, it's a fetish. I'm like, do you actually know what a fetish is? Like, yeah, that blew my mind. But I haven't really had too much, to be honest, because I wrote it in a way where I'm not saying I'm Korean. I'm not saying I'm an expert in Korean. Mina is discovering K-pop, K-drama, Korea, just the same way I am as a fan. That's how I've written the story, if that makes sense. It's a discovery,
yeah,
rather
definitely
than factual. Yeah.
Yeah, that really resonates, that the story you write, like coming from your own experience, your own discovery, like no one can fault you for that. You're not trying to reach and imagine what other cultures, what other people are like. Like you're writing from experience, and it's about you.
There you go. And I also did a lot of research to fact check a lot of things. And I checked with a lot of my Korean friends as well, just to make sure I'm not misrepresenting anything. And I also shared a good amount about Nigerian and African culture as well in the book. So introducing people to my culture as well. So it's nice. A really good mix. Yeah.
Yeah, Virginia was wondering if you hired any cultural consultants or sensitivity readers. I know that's a part of the practice now of publishing a book. But yeah, it sounds like you had a lot of friends and community to pitch in with that advice.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Yes. So I had and one of my ARC readers who is she represents a lot of sensitivity reading around the Asian culture. I had her read it and she gave me some really good advice as well. And I also had some of my Korean friends read it and they were absolutely fine with everything I've written about Korea in the book. And actually appreciated how I explore and express the culture, which was really good. So I'm really pleased with that. So for sure, I did that.
Well done. Like diving more into the writing process itself, about how long would it say it took you to write the novel?
It took me 6 months.
Oh.
And it took that long because I was working full time. Yeah. And I thought, when would I ever find the time to write? Because I would start work at 10, I'll finish at 7, get home for 9. I was just so tired. So I decided, you know what? The one free time I had was my way to work in the morning when my brain was still very active. But normally that slot was for K-dramas. So I had to cut back.
Oh, no.
On my K-drama. Yeah, it was very painful. So yeah, I had to replace my K-drama time with writing instead. So on the way to work, I'd be on the bus, have OSTs playing in my ears and just start writing away. And I had a rush from knowing I had only 1 hour gap from home to work to get the writing done. So it was very exciting. And how the ideas came as a rush was just, oof. It was the best experience, to be honest. I really enjoyed writing this book that way.
I think we're making our way around to the conclusion here of our time together. And I was just wondering if you had advice for other aspiring authors who haven't published anything quite yet.
Just start. That's it. Just take small steps. Do as many research as you can. Also, explore and write a topic that you're passionate about. That would make it so much more fun. It would make the words flow easier. But I would say also learn the technicality of writing. There's different styles. Some people like to just start writing. I like to have my three-act structure where I know the beginning, the middle, and the end. Filling the gaps after that is a lot easier. And I also planned of what would happen chapter one all the way to the end, although I sort of overwrote anyway. Cutting down my book was very painful, but it just became a trilogy, which was great.
There you go. Yeah, now you have material for books on books on books.
Exactly. But the struggle with that, though, because the first time I wrote a book and a half, I struggled to continue book two because I'm starting from somewhere I wasn't refreshed on, if that makes sense. So I had to go back to the beginning and just remind myself of what happened to carry on. But the biggest thing I would say to help anyone, small steps. I never thought I would finish the book for just writing 1 hour on the bus every weekday to work in 6 months. But somehow I even overwrote. So technically I probably finished in 4 months, but because I kept going, it became a part of my routine. It was so much fun. I remember what part of the bus I was on when I was writing certain scenes because of how emotional I would get. Sometimes I'll cry, like, I'm so sad. And I'm like, people watching me. Because you're in there with the character. Sometimes I forget I'm the writer because, no, honestly, sometimes I get so excited about something or I get so sad and I'm like, oh my gosh, why did that happen? I'm like, Fatima, you made it happen.
You did it.
You literally made it happen. Like, I forget I'm the enemy sometimes. But yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah, it's like the story is within you or being channeled through you.
Absolutely. Another great advice would be take criticism as well, because I had my first draft or my first manuscript, shall I say, was an absolute disaster. It's going to be. And once I accepted that, everyone that gives you advice about writing always tells you to prepare and accept that the first manuscript will be a disaster. And that's okay. Because you're starting something new. It's a new territory. Of course, it's not going to be perfect. It's just getting the words out. So when my first editor had given me some advice on how to like add more layers, show, don't tell, she was like, Mina's thoughts, she couldn't hear Mina's voice, like all these things. So what I did was go back to the manuscript and add layers every edit. So the first layer could be adding more description of like either the characters themselves or the environment they were in, add in more thoughts of Mina's afterthoughts or what she felt. The best advice I had, because till this day, every review talks about how I wrote and described things. And I'm like, honestly, it makes me scared because I'm like, what did I do? Because I need to do it again. But I don't remember what I did. It really freaks me out because everyone mentions it. And I'm like, how did I describe it? But I think this is a good thing as well about not reading too much of other people's work when you're doing yours, because then you're finding your own voice and you're finding your own style. And I think I really did that accidentally, but I did that and I'm really scared I can't do it again. I hope I do. I hope my readers are not listening to this because they're going to come for me. But yeah, book two is coming very, very soon. I'm already working on that. Nice. My new way of staying accountable for that is doing what I did in the first time. So after I'd done the first manuscript and editing was a bit difficult, I started something called Time or Money Challenge on TikTok. So every day I'll make a video saying if I chose to give my book some time, and if I didn't, I'll put some money into marketing my book for when it comes out. And every time I chose time, because your girl ain't got no money, but yeah. It got me to finish the book, and a lot of people followed my journey from those videos. To this day, I get some people, oh my gosh, remember when you did your Time and Money Challenge? And I'm like, how have you been here for over a year waiting for this book? It really blew my mind. So when people read the book after waiting over a year and go, worth the wait, I literally cry because I was freaking out. People were waiting over a year. What if it's not good? What if they don't like it? So yeah. That was scary, but I'm really glad it paid off.
Sounds like it sure did.
Yeah, so wrapping up, we wanted to have a few fun questions for the end of the conversation. So okay. Obviously, you know, talking about K-dramas. So when this book inevitably is made into a Netflix adaptation TV series.
Amen.
Who was your dream cast for Mina and June? I know we already talked about Taewoong, but I wonder if you had anybody else in mind, especially for Mina.
Do you know, funny enough, I think for June, because it's a mix of, yeah, Taewoong's blend, but there's also other things. I think I'll like V from BTS to play June.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. I think I'll like that.
My bias. Cast him.
Yeah, I think V definitely. For Mina, I've always visualized, I don't know if you know this American actress called Ryan Destiny. Perhaps she could.
Let me look her
it.
Up real quick.
Yeah, either her or I just wanted to be a fresh face. Just someone that can really embody the character, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like Mina will find her own voice. But yeah, to visualize, it's a bit hard. But V, I think, for June. And there's another main character called Dongmin, which a lot of people get to like because you only meet Dongmin in the second half of the book.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure you heard from his name. I named him after Chaona's real name, Dongmin. So I wanted to make Dongmin what I wish or what I think Chaonu wish he could be like, what he could express, yeah. How carefree he could be. So Dongmin is that character that just brings the vibrant fun into the book. And that's how I feel like Chaonu's alter ego would be, if that makes sense. So I kind of wrote it for Chaonu, you could say. Mm-hmm.
So like, V plays June and Chaonu plays Dongmin.
Well, he can play Dongmin and finally be himself in a way I feel like he should
be. Yeah, there you go.
Sense. Yeah, that could be.
I think this Dongmin could be a great pitch to Chaonu. Like, we could solve right? some of your existential problems if you
yeah, and actually play a live part. A part where you get to call yourself your real name. I just changed the name to Kim, not Lee. Sorry, Chaonu. I tried. And for Jiwon, Jiwon, who would Jiwon be? I'm not so sure, to be fair, because she's very like girly. She's very happy-go-lucky because Mina's quite miserable most of the time. So she brings the joy out of Mina. Jiwon, too, I think will find herself. And imagine the actress. Have you guys seen this drama from recently called Marry My Husband?
Oh, yeah.
You know the actress that
heard
was
rave
the
reviews.
Evil friend?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think she could be Jiwon, like the older version of Jiwon.
Mm-hmm.
Because she could be very, like, eggyo, cutesy type personality. So, yeah, maybe her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like a winning star-studded cast to me.
Right?
I would click. I would watch.
Mm-hmm. Although I do, because I'm just curious. So, like, because I'm still going through the book and reading it and excited for part two. What OSTs should listen or readers be listening to while they read the book? Do you have any recommendations?
Ooh, and who do you want to sing the OST for your?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That, yeah. First, that question. First, who do you want to sing the OST for the Netflix? And then my question.
Oh, my dream girl for the OST will have to be the same person that did the crazy.
Yep.
Is it crazy for you?
Yeah.
She is just the queen of OSTs, I think.
Hyolyn.
Yes, Hyolyn is the queen. I think her voice will embody just... to be fair, I wrote a song already for the OST. I'm just trying to find the right collaborator, yeah. It's funny how it's easy to write songs in Korean than English. Don't ask me how. But yeah, that was fun. Hopefully it comes out soon. And there's definitely a song in book two and for book two. I'm hoping that one will get released beforehand. So it's going to be... a song written by June for Mina. And I want a Korean singer to definitely body that one. And yeah, I'm looking for people. If you guys know anyone, hit me up. I am looking for people to represent that song. It's a beautiful, beautiful song, although I wrote it. But I am shocked by how, you know, just...
You're like, I'm just the messenger. It came through me.
There you go. I was doing dishes and it's like, oh, okay.
Yep.
And it just kept coming. I think it's going to be an amazing part of the book and I'm excited for that. So yeah, for the OSTs people should listen to while reading the book, I listened to a few songs and the ones that stand out to me currently is, I spoke to Michaela about this previously, was when the Oh My Angel from the Angel's
Last Mission.
Yeah. Yes, that song. There's a bike scene if you guys read it. there's a bike scene where Mina's on a bike and Juna's riding and they're going through London Bridge. That's the song that inspired that scene. You know what I mean when you read it. But yeah, that song definitely. Also, there's this song called Slow Dancing in the Burning Room. Rosé from Blackpink did a cover of it with just guitars. So mellow, so beautiful. I listened to that a lot writing because it just kept me calm. It kept my brain very clear whenever I was writing. So that's a really good song as well. Although it's not Korean, it's a really slow melody by a Korean, so it still counts. Also, Kim Bong-su, of course, 보고 싶다. Especially when Jun and Mina are yearning for each other. The perfect song to listen to. And lastly, one that sticks out to me as well is one called Love Always Runs Away. This song just pulls on my heartstrings. It's from the drama. It's the 50-episode drama called The Gentleman and a Lady. Beautiful song. So yeah, that's my last recommendation.
Ooh, I love that this episode is a book review and also like major music recommendation vibes. Because we don't talk about K-drama OSTs enough. It is a pillar in K-pop that needs more attention. Absolutely. So thank you for letting us do that.
Right. No, thank you so much.
All right. I think that about wraps it up. It has been so fun having you on the show. Yeah,
thank you, Fatima.
Thank you. Yay. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. So wrapping up, let's let our listeners know where they can find you on social media, where they can find your book. Just plug all the things.
Okay, so with social media, it's all the same name, author Fatima Alabi. I'm mostly active on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. I also have my website, www.fatimaalabi.com. You can find my book on Amazon, but if it's an issue for your country, let me know. You can email me at authorfatimaalabi.com and I'll get it to your country. Don't you worry about that. So you can get the ebook and the paperback on Amazon, everywhere Amazon's available. So yeah, that's me.
You can find me on Instagram at catchlight27 or find me in the Slack, which is in the episode description.
Yeah, and you can find me also in the Slack and all of us at the K-pop cast. Okay, goodbye everybody.
Bye.
And what's the title of the book? One more time.
Yeah.
It's called The Strings Between Love and Race. This name came to me while I was about to go to bed. Perfect title, describes everything.
Mm-hmm. So sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you again for being on the show.
No worries. Thank you guys for having me, and thank you guys for listening.